elevator door, please. Can I have a roll call?
Kurt Alstead.
Here.
Tracy Carluccio. Tim Daugherty.
Present.
Michael Dressler. Michael Francis.
Here.
Robert Haltaway. Bruce James.
Here.
Carl Richko. Jim Riley.
Here.
Michael Sepetich.
Here.
Michael T. Fang.
Here.
James Vizioli. Richard Roden.
Here.
Robert Wall.
Here. Will you please read the open public meeting statement?
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent written notice of the time, date, and location of this meeting to pertinent newspapers throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website.
Thank you. Can you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Brings us to our first action, approval of the October 16 minutes.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Alstead.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio. Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler. Councilmember Francis.
Yeah.
Councilmember Haltaway. Councilmember James.
Alstead.
Councilmember Richko. Councilmember Sevetich.
Yes.
Councilmember T. Fang.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli. Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Walton.
Yes.
Chairman Riley.
Yes. Next item up is the approval of the Highlands Development Credit Bank minutes of November 6th.
Motion to approve.
Second. Yes.
Motion second. Any discussion? See a non-roll call, please.
I didn't hear the motion in the second. I heard
sorry.
Who was second? Thank you. Councilmember Alston.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio. Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler. Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Haltaway. Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Richko. Councilmember Sevetich.
Yes.
Councilmember T. Fang.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli. Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Walton.
Yes.
Chairman Riley.
Yes. Brings us to the next item, which is the chairman's report. I don't have anything specific this evening. That's not being covered in the reports later on. Any council members have any new items? Seeing none, we'll move into the executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few items in my report I would like to highlight for you. The first is how towns are faring with plan conformance implementation. And this question was raised at one of the stakeholder meetings we had. I pointed out that I do try to mention this every time in my report. So Wilma, this is for you.
Okay.
So, in Califon Borough, a certificate was issued for the Municipal Exemption Determination Authorization and Checklist. The municipality adopted checklist ordinance. They adopted the Highlands Environmental Resource Inventory. They adopted the Master Plan Highlands Element, and they adopted, and a certificate was issued for the Municipal Exemption Determination Resolution and Authorization. In Roxbury Township, the municipality adopted the Highlands Environmental Resource Inventory. In Washington Township, Morris County, a certificate was issued for a Municipal Exemption Determination Authorization, and in Hardeston Township, the municipality adopted, and a certificate was issued for the Municipal Exemption Determination Resolution and Authorization. In your report on the TDR receiving area update, there was nothing, but as of yesterday, we had progress from a town. Newton has submitted their Phase 2 report, which is site analysis, and they are prepared to move on to Phase 3, which is market analysis. So we're seeing some good progress on some of our towns, which is great. I'm very happy to announce that we are welcoming Kelly Curran as a part-time research management specialist. Her start date was November 3rd, and here she is.
Hello. Welcome aboard.
On Fenmore, I have a very brief report, as that it seems to be slowing down. The state is still on track to be completing most of the installation of the geothermal liner by the end of the year. Truck traffic has dropped significantly as most of the clean fill and topsoil has been brought to the site. There have been no odor complaints of late, and work is progressing well. So it really is starting to wind down, and I hope soon I'll be able to report that the capping is completed. On the RMP update meetings, some of our council members attended, Councilmember Alsted, Councilmember Voden, Councilmember Richko, and Councilmember Sevetich. So anytime you'd like to jump in and add to the brief overview I'm going to give of what happened, please, that would be great. As with all our stakeholder meetings, we have tried to be consistent. We start with a review of the monitoring program and what we hope to achieve. And then there's always a discussion of potential indicators and data sources. And I think we've really gotten some good information from everybody that we've met with. One of the things that really has struck me as a good thing is that there have been some side benefits that we see. And that is we've started to identify areas where we can better partner with state agencies and other entities. For example, we think, and this probably will interest Councilmember Francis, that we can work with the State Park Service on lake management. We think we can work with the DEP on temporary debris management areas. And one of the participants in the real estate session is working with CORE to develop an educational program to present to boards of realtors so that they'll be better informed on plans. So it's really, I think, been moving forward in a very positive direction. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Horsham. That brings us to the Budget and Finance Committee. This is a resolution for consideration for the fiscal year 2015 capital budget. I believe, did you have anything to report on this?
Yeah, well, it's pretty self-explanatory. If anybody has any questions, this is just the appropriations. We've already passed our budget. So this is our appropriations resolution. And if you have any questions, I'm going to stick it to her and have to answer them.
This is just a cover in the funds.
Right.
Yes.
Anybody have any questions on that?
Can we get a motion on the resolution, please?
I'll move.
You get a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. At this point in time, we'll open it up to the public. Does anybody in the public wish to be heard on this resolution? Please raise your hand. Yes.
My name is Deborah Post, Highlands Act Farm property owner, Chester Township. The Highlands Protection Fund has morphed into the Planner's Full Employment Fund. Professionals billing at three-figure hourly rates are more deserving of excessive compensation than the property owners who have actually cared for the land are deserving of just compensation. Section 18 of the Act states that municipal grants are to reimburse, quote, reasonable expenses, unquote, in connection with Act implementation. However, there has been no check and balance on the municipality's use of the grants, nor has there been any accountability or supervision regarding reasonableness. Grant money should be subject to the same accountability and supervision as the legislature requires in NJSA 40:55D-53.2, the municipal land use law addressing professional fees. Specifically, planners' invoices should be submitted with services clearly identified in quarter-hour increments with simultaneously submitted copies to this council, and those invoices should be reviewed by the chief financial officer of the municipality prior to payment authorization. But nothing like the MLUL procedure is being followed. To my comments today, I'm attaching a Planner Ritter example invoice from Chester Township, which is prepared in block format with no meaningful identification of services being rendered and a simple aggregate 20 hours of time churned by a junior associate. This invoice was paid, no questions asked. The Ritter firm has already received $30,000, if not more, of Chester's municipal grants. When added to the $80,000 in this resolution, Chester exceeds the $100,000 limit. Having already received healthy grants for Highlands Act work, Ritter felt it appropriate to bill me personally another $5,000 in connection with implementation of my own private Highlands Just Compensation efforts, because he claims he needed to study the Highlands Act. Of course, it is only appropriate for planners to bleed harmed landowners a little bit more. Maybe we haven't been harmed enough. This council has delegated exemption determination to municipalities. I ask this council to amend and clarify that delegation to stipulate that Highlands landowners applying for Highlands exemptions are not asked to pay municipal professional fees in connection with exemption determinations. If the municipality sincerely needs outside professional assistance in its exemption determination, they should be instructed to apply for a municipal grant to cover those reasonable expenses. Such a grant is allowed under the language of Section 18.
Thank you. Anybody else opposed? Wish to hear? Yes, ma'am.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. It's been a long time coming. We're delighted to see these grants, and we hope that the council will support them. Thank you.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Yes, sir.
My name is David Schoaf. I own a farm in Lebanon Township, and I previously provided you with information, including Lebanon Township's exemption paperwork, which involves at the least a $100 fee just to get the paperwork so you can fill it out. Then it goes to the planner slash engineer for their review, where you establish an escrow account for an exemption. Look up the meaning of the word exemption and apply it. Make exemptions exempt. Exempt from fees, exempt from this nonsense, when all that needs to be done is to look at the date on the deed to establish the validity of the exemption being asked for. That's it. Look at the date on the deed. You don't need an escrow fee. You don't need an application fee. You just need some brains. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on this issue? Yes, ma'am.
Ellen Heinrich, New Jersey Farm Bureau. We had our annual convention recently. One of the policies that was approved was for us to work with you to have no fees for these exemptions or to get you to take a look at them so that they are more reasonable. And I think these people brought up enough information to certainly raise some questions.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on this issue?
Hi, Klopp, farmer in the Highlands Preservation Area. How much money are you talking about here?
We have a bunch of numbers for Water Use and Conservation Management Plan funding, $645,000, but that is not funds that are released to a municipality. That's based on their ability to satisfy the MERC program. We also have $705,000, not to exceed amount, for stormwater program funding that handles well over 45 municipalities, split into $15,000 increments, and that's for training and use of the stormwater application that you have already seen. And for additional plan conformance funds, these are largely for additional economic development plans. For municipalities where they were early adopters and early petitioners, therefore they missed out on those dollars, just over $879,000. But no dollars are paid. These are just encumbrances of monies that were in the budget, not until a work program or deliverable is provided and the invoices match the work deliverable, which we scrutinize quite heavily.
Question is total.
645 plus 705 plus 879.
It's 2,229,300.
There you go. Thank you.
You're
I appreciate
welcome.
That.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak on this issue? Seeing none, close the public portion. Any council members have any comments, concerns? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Mr. Schoaf?
Yes.
Mr. Summers?
Yes.
Mr. Bureau?
Yes.
Mr. Councilmember Alstead.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler. Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Holdaway. Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Richco. Councilmember Sevetich.
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefang.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli. Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Walton.
No.
Chairman Ryan.
Yes. Just some clarity on the exemptions. It was delegated to municipalities. We did not dictate fees one way or another, first of all. Second of all, you're right. It is an exemption, and as Mr. Walton pointed out, a landowner can go forward on their own without getting approval from the township. They run the risk, or if they're financing or things along those lines, they run the risk of having to be questioned later on. So if it's truly exempt and you feel like it's exempted, you move forward with the project, you do so at your, you know, at your own risk. And
but you can do that anyhow.
Well, I'm just stating that it is an exception. That's all I'm stating, because there's some comments that led down a different path.
You need to read the dictionary.
Next item up, Mr. Walton, you're going to read out on the landowner equity and land preservation.
Sure. We had hoped to have in the hands of every member of the council a copy of our open space plan and process and application, all that paperwork. Fortunately, the governor's office is taking interest in this project, and there's been a little bit of a delay. I think it's a good sign. If the governor's interested in it, that means we're making planning on top of what we already have. It also meets the stated goals the administration from the beginning, which is a compensated landowner. So I'm a little disappointed in the delay, but pleased in the interest. We also met as a committee with the Builders Association to talk about the TDR program. And I was of the mindset that the TDR program was bound for failure. And in talking with the Builders Association, they seem to believe that it can be made work. Just have to find the right municipalities to deal with. We have made it a habit, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, of insisting that towns take on at least the potential to be a TDR receiving zone and exchange the income grant to fund those studies. We really should be a little more careful in how we hand out that money, because there are towns that we've given it to that really have no shot at being a TDR receiving zone. We should try to scrutinize a little more carefully what towns we give that money to. It should be towns that are developing, that are targets for mass development, not necessarily towns in the Highlands region that have a rail station. A little more careful with how we spend that money, I think we'll get some real good benefit. So with that in mind, Margaret and staff have been reaching out to urban municipalities across the state and effort to try to find some interested parties. So there's some potential at the end of that. And hopefully by the January meeting, we'll have on your agenda for approval the open space program. That's it.
I hope so. Thank you, Mr. Walton. Next item up is the Plan Conformance Committee. Important presentation. I believe Ms. Nordstrom is going to handle this.
That would be correct. We are presenting Franklin Township in Warren County as a candidate for the Plan Conformance Approach, Shepherd's Approach. Township of Franklin petitioned the Highlands Council for Plan Conformance with respect to lands within the preservation area only. The Township's petition for plan conformance was approved by the Highlands Council on May 19, 2011, and memorialized in Highlands Council Resolution 2011-17. Development within the Highlands Preservation Area is extremely limited in Franklin Township. No portion of the preservation area is serviced by sewer infrastructure, and the entire preservation area, as you know, is subject to DEP preservation area rules. Additionally, in Franklin Township, a significant portion of their preservation area is already preserved land. Over 670 acres, approximately 18% of the township preservation area, are preserved lands. The Highlands Council Municipal Build-Out Report in 2009, which provided an analysis of buildable lots in the municipality, indicated that in the preservation area, there were 23 potential residential septic units for development. An updated planning analysis of undeveloped lands within the township's preservation area revealed that additional parcels have come under preservation since the original build-out report, which reduced the yield to a total of 12 units. Based on the applicability of the Highlands Land Use Ordinance, just three parcels in the township, which we have up there, have development potential that would trigger review. These three parcels are currently assessed as Kew Farm for all or a portion of that property. And we added that council member Carluccio because I think he brought up that question the last time around. So this is the graph that you're familiar with now. Those are the three parcels in question. And this is our analysis. I think three parcels of 448 acres yielding a very, very limited development potential. The parcels in tan are the ones that we're talking about in the preservation area. And that's a kind of a little more of a bird's eye view. We've got one more. And that's an analysis of how we arrived at the development potential, the combination of 88 acres for forested acres and non-forested is 25. So as you also know, we're not voting on this tonight. Our practice now is to present it to council and to the public, have it posted on our website so that the public has a chance to ask questions if they like, and then we will be voting on it next month.
Okay. Any comments?
Yes, I had a couple comments, yes. Mr. Chairman. I apologize for being late. Just a couple things. I do have a concern about us using the checklist approach, and I realize that it's said every time that the exact same standards will be applied. But my concern is that when we look at these, there's certain attributes that are in the maps that we get, but it's only if you go through and actually use our interactive map on our website that you really get a good picture of how significant the development impacts could be and whether or not it meets the de minimis standard. Because my concern is that we're not looking at the quality of the acreage that could possibly be developed. And we're talking about this being, a not significant amount of development, this 448 acres. But when you do look at the attributes that are there and all the tremendous work that has gone into preparing the resources information on these parcels, you see that this is really the best of the best. Remember, it's the preservation area. It's the best of the highlands. And in this preservation area, the things that really count in terms of resources are things like forests and streams, riparian areas, high quality integrity, habitat, and that's what we have on these parcels. And I know that, again, that the argument will be back, but we'll pay attention to all of this, and that will constrain the development that can happen there. But my concern is that we're not getting a full picture like we should. And from the information that we have on hand and all the analysis that has been done of what truly the impact is of what could be keystone pieces of property. This is highly valuable forest resource area, and these are also agricultural parcels. And the problem, I don't see our farming community standing up and yelling for protecting these farming areas here. But they actually, not only are they active farming areas, but they are part of the greater than 250-acre aggregates of farming areas, which means that if we cut holes into this, are we then going to lose that aggregate of 250 acres, which makes it a special agricultural resource area considered to be more valuable? Cutting into these forest areas, are we then fragmenting that big forest that it's connected to? There's preserved areas right near all of this. My concern with this light brush, this light look at what the value is of these pieces, it's not just based on how many acres it is. It's based on what are the resources present on these properties. And that's what we should be looking at, and we're not looking at it when we look at the checklist report. I know we're not voting on this tonight, but I appreciate the added information that our executive director gave, but I feel it's really important for us to do more thorough analyses in order to understand the integrity and the value of the resources that will be impacted and then decide whether this is a de minimis potential development at these properties.
Thank you.
Again, it's a preservation area. This is the best of what we have, and we should be doing everything to make sure that we do not minimize or in some way gloss over the important resources that would be impacted. So I think that the full land use management ordinance should be applied. This, a checklist approach is really not appropriate here.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yeah, you bring up a lot of good concerns, Carluccio, and I'm just wondering what the staff has to say about these comments, that things we don't see in these maps and the potential effects that we don't see here.
Well, if I may, you know, the only difference between the checklist approach and the land use ordinance is who does the review. Yeah. That's it.
It's not what's being impacted. It's just the review process.
Yeah. So whether our staff does it, you know, and frankly, our staff is pretty darn good at analyzing the resources, or the town does it, you know, and it's harder for a town to do this, you know, they've only got maybe an opportunity to use this ordinance once or twice. I mean, it doesn't make sense for them to try to train their own people to do it, which is why we're allowing towns to hold a checklist. I do understand what Council Member Carluccio is saying about resources, and I think those concerns are very, very important, but I also think that the way we address them as an organization is through what Council Member Walton is talking about, and that is our open space and preservation program that we hope to roll out next month. That's just my take on it.
Any other comments? Seeing none, this will be on the agenda for our next meeting. Next item, Ms. Horstman.
All right. Next item is a resolution, a determination on an application for a Highlands redevelopment area, a designation for Block 201, Lots 21 through 6, Block 202, Lot 2, Borough of Oakland-Bergen County. The staff is recommending a rejection of this application for a redevelopment area. The applicant and his engineer, and I believe his attorney, are here. But I will go through briefly why we are recommending that this application be rejected. There are two key issues. One, the first one is that this application does not meet the 70% coverage threshold. A brief history, the complete application on this was received by the Council on October 10th, 2014. The plan delineates two distinct areas separated by undisturbed forests that represents the proposed Highlands redevelopment area, in which the applicant identifies impervious surface that encompasses 70% of the area to meet the requirements of Highlands Preservation Area Rules at NJ ACE 738.6.7, a site at which at least 70% of the area thereof is covered with impervious surface. One of the two distinct areas proposed as the Highlands redevelopment area is identified as Shotbrock. The applicant identifies this area as impervious surface, which was included in the applicant's calculation of 70% impervious surface of the proposed Highlands redevelopment area. The Highlands Council staff, with an NJDEP representative, conducted a site visit on October 27, 2014, to review the proposed Highlands redevelopment area, including the area designated as Shotbrock. Based on the site visit and further review, staff has determined that the area identified as Shotbrock does not meet the definition of impervious surface as found in the Highlands Act. The impervious surface within the proposed development area was then recalculated by Highlands staff, and it was determined to be approximately 60% of the proposed area, which is short of the minimum 70% impervious surface required for a Highlands redevelopment area designation. The second issue that we have with this application involves the definition of a Highlands redevelopment area. After reviewing the application and conducting a field survey, it is evident to Highlands staff that the proposed project would not result in the redevelopment of previously developed areas, but rather would result in new development in previously undisturbed areas. Therefore, in addition to not meeting the 70% impervious surface criteria, the application, after staff review, does not meet the criteria for development of previously development areas required by the Highlands redevelopment area designation procedures. And for these reasons, the staff recommends that the Highlands adopt a resolution that rejects this application. Now, in the interest of a picture being worth a thousand words, we have pictures from the sidewalk, which James Humphrey will go over briefly, so you can visualize what I've just been talking about.
A quick overview of where we are. This is in Oakland Borough. It's adjacent to the West Oakland Industrial Park. The area in yellow is the existing impervious surface areas. The area in the center there that's forested, that is the area that's proposed for potential development. And the area to the northwest, adjacent to 287, is the area that's discussed as shot rock. Shot rock being remnants of construction from 287. So this is a picture taken looking towards 287 in the area that's designated as the plains as shot rock. You can see that it's heavily vegetated. This is an area looking down the shot rock towards 287. Again, you can see that it's grown up with heavy vegetation. Again, another shot of the shot rock area. This is a thin, narrow area from the plan looking towards 287. Again, heavy vegetation with the tree even running through it. The fence designates the property boundary. This is the ground detail of the shot rock area. Again, heavily vegetated, no evidence of any impervious surface in the area whatsoever. Another ground detail in another area of the shot rock area. Again, heavily vegetated. This is where we did a very shallow excavation showing that, you know, the soil in the area, topsoil, has either been placed there naturally or was placed there as possible revegetation at the time. This again is in the area that was designated as shot rock and is calculated as impervious surface on the plan. That was the shot rock area. This is the remainder of the site, just to give you an idea of the undeveloped nature of the site. This is an area looking towards the east, downwards of the site, to where the detention basin would be placed from the area that is proposed for the roadway. This is an area looking towards the area that would potentially be developed under the redevelopment area that was ever approved. Again, a forested area looking from where the proposed development would occur down to where the access road would be put through. This is looking from where the entrance to where the property is, looking up towards, through where the access road would go towards the primarily developed area. This is a rock outcrop adjacent to the shot rock area, back towards 287. It seems to be a natural rock outcrop. And this was the extent of what we could determine was shot rock. It was probably approximately 50 to 75 square feet. That could have even been naturally occurring rock. And that was the extent of our site.
I believe we have representing the applicant is his engineer, Mr. Lukinchich.
Sorry.
And Mr.
Cassio,
are
yes.
you speaking?
Yes, thank you. And just for the record, this has been deemed not worthy of redevelopment by staff. You've asked to come before us and have us take formal action, correct? So we basically be affirming our staff's recommendation based upon the application. This is not a full-blown application to this board. We've agreed to give them a couple minutes before we take a vote to give a quick presentation. And at this point in time, I'll go ahead if you could introduce yourself.
Ben Cassio, Franklin Lakes, New Jersey, attorney of law on behalf of the applicant and also the Laura Latinsix, our engineer. Get a little unorthodox here. We're going to do a little dog and pony show.
Very briefly.
And so we'll both be speaking. You're going to have to speak a little louder.
Can we go back to the aerial photograph, please? The first slide, please.
While he's doing that, just for the board, a little background history here. We've been at this since 2009 when we received the planning board approval from the borough of Oakland to place this very small graveled area for the storage of construction equipment, which is permitted in the industrial zone which we are located in. And then we proceeded and received county approval, soil conservation approval, and then proceeded to the DEP for an exemption. The exemption was denied based upon the exact question you have before you today, which is the impervious area calculation, shot rock. That is on appeal right now. Once we filed the appeal, it was suggested by the Attorney General on the case that perhaps the matter could be settled so that we didn't have to adjudicate that issue, which brought us before the Highlands Council. Although you said that the application was filed in October, found complete in October, in fact, we've been here for 2 years talking to your staff on the settlement of this issue. It was initially, once we started, it was said that, well, we could consider the shot rock.
I don't really want to get into hearsay and considerations like that.
I think it's important.
An opportunity here to...
It's important for background for this council to understand
why
we're here.
We're not going to be looking into that. Right. So.
Okay, we have documents. We have the minutes of all the meetings to enter. And it's not hearsay.
Yeah.
There's minutes of meetings that have been held over a period of 2 years that are part of the record.
That's right. Through the chair, you've gotten the knock.
Yeah.
So what do you want us to do? We're not going to settle anything for you. You have been vetted by our very professional staff with a recommendation to us under the law.
All right.
So I think we're going to do what we're recommending.
And you have to vote on the resolution. And based upon what I say, you may or may not vote positively on that resolution. So please allow me the time to say what happens.
I said I would give you a few minutes of
thank
continue.
You. Thank
I'll
you.
Try to keep
I'll try not to take advantage of that, but I want to get this issue on the record. So we are here based upon a settlement suggestion. And when we started, it was recommended that maybe the best approach would go for redevelopment, which we then pursued. We went to the planning board. They recommended to the mayor council. The mayor council recommended to the Highlands. We are here today requesting that redevelopment. Now, part of your denial in the resolution not only talks about the impervious area in Shot Rock, which we totally disagree with, and we have reasons for it. And since it's part of your resolution, you should hear whether or not that is accurate or not. Our engineer will speak to that.
This is not an application.
It's on the resolution.
The resolution.
If your resolution has flaws in it, this council should know about it, and they should not vote on it if it is flawed or incorrect.
At this point in time, I believe it is not flawed or incorrect, and our staff has suggested otherwise. If you're proceeding to court with this, or already have, because of the DEP situation, that's something to be adjudicated elsewhere besides here.
I'll let the council look on that when the time comes. The second issue has to do with whether or not this is on the fringe of the industrial park. This property is in the center of the industrial park, not in the fringe of the industrial park. The entire industrial park is encompassed by this lot on the other side of 287, as well as the surrounding areas of this property. This is part of the larger property, 7 acres on the other side of 13 acres on the other side of 287. And it was created when 287 came through and separated these two properties. They are still part of the same lot. And your Highlands regulations qualify this as one property because things such as the streets, highways do not separate property under your Highlands regulations. This is part of one entire site that is part of the industrial park. And it was created by 287, which was your state-mandated highway, federally mandated highway. Also, as it pertains to the Shot Rock issue, all of that Shot Rock came from that highway. And the state, instead of removing and remediating that Shot Rock, left it there on my client's property, causing this problem, which we have asked this board, this council, to give us relief from, and call it what it is, impervious. So, you know, we're coming from the ridiculous to the absurd because of the creation of the state highway, and this board, this council, should see the reasonableness in this request in light of all the surrounding circumstances. So that's what my approach was as far as giving you some background as to what brings us here and why the council should not consider that Shot Rock as part of this denial, and that this is not in the fringe but in the center of the industrial park.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Before, do you have anything to add?
Just to be so the council understands this application, to state that it is not adjacent to the industrial park. I'm tracing the open industrial park behind us. Okay? There's 287. This property is in the industrial park. And the second item in your in the resolution is that because it's forested, it doesn't meet the criteria for redevelopment. And we asked the question, would it be different if it was in the dead center of the industrial park, or is it colored by the fact that it's on the edge of the industrial park? There's some major issues here, and we're concerned that the council have the total picture. It is significant that this property was created when 287 was extended. This property was fragmented. If you look behind you, the area on the upper part of that is the moonscape in Oakland when you drive on 287, where the DOT stockpiles shot rock that remains today. Some of that rock shot rock is 40 feet deep. And to say that it does not meet the definition of impervious surface, when I've had applications, I've submitted grass pavers, and it's been determined by DEP that grass pavers are impervious surface. But here we have shot rock 8 to 40 feet deep, and it's been deemed not to be impervious. We really question that.
Okay. Any other facts that you would like to point out from the resolution?
I think those are
thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this point in time, I'll entertain a motion.
Also move.
Second. Motion and second. Any council discussion?
Yeah, I have some questions.
Yes.
I love development. One of the problems is I don't see it, so I'm kind of, I guess, not on, so I don't show the council sure. But so my question is, I guess, for staff. In reading the resolution, it sounds like the relief they seek cannot be given by us, but by DEP. These are DEP regulations, 70%. Is that correct? Are they statutory and DEP regulations, or are they Highlands Council regulations and rules?
Both. First, the Highlands Council has to find that it meets the minimum 70% impervious surface area.
Who determined that it was 70%?
You will.
Who determined that 70% is the threshold?
Oh, that's in the Highlands Act.
That's in the Act, okay.
So the Act and the DEP regulations and right. Our procedures mirror.
So the Act says 70%. DEP is promulgating regulations supporting that rule. We decide whether it is 70% or not. But that 70% is the state. Then the question which they're asking us to judge, I guess, is whether or not this shot rock is impervious or not.
Correct.
And our staff says no, and their expert says it is.
Correct.
I'm sorry, vice versa. Our staff says it is not impervious. They say it is impervious.
But there's an important distinction, if I would. The moonscape that Mr. Lutinchik just pointed out in the white area to the upper right is not part of the proposed redevelopment area. The area that the staff considered and was proposed as shot rock is where the white is. Those were the pictures that where the vegetation was. So whether or not the size of the industrial parcel is not relevant, the yellow lines are the proposed redevelopment area.
All right, so they're saying that 70% of the property is impervious, mm-hmm. And even if they're right, it's not the 70% they want to build on. Is that what you're saying? They want to build on 50% impervious and 20% that nobody disputes is impervious. Is it?
Correct.
Yeah, they are disputing.
I'm sorry, yeah. Well, yes, but the part that is disputed as far as being impervious or not is not part of what they want to develop. They want to develop on land that clearly everybody agrees is impervious.
Correct. Right.
Even if we wanted to, what relief could we give these folks?
Well, again, this is usually taken care of administratively. It's the applicant that has to come before
so
us.
So they're appealing the staff's end group.
This denial is the recommendation for a denial is based strictly on the lack of the 70% impervious surface, correct? Everything else with this application was...
No, there are two things. The 70% impervious coverage is one of them, but the other one is the feeling that if you look at where the development is supposed to go, right there, it's really not a redevelopment project. No, go back to the map. Okay.
It's not pretty soon.
Okay.
I think Rob said they're not really on the impervious.
But it's impervious or not, it's somewhat.
Even if they met the 70%.
Correct. They're not building on the shot rock. They're building on good, clean soil that everybody thinks we should hold on to for dear life.
Right. So it would not be a redevelopment per se, it would be a new development.
It wasn't previously developed.
It was previously disturbed.
When
they brought in the shot rock.
Different. Okay, there are two different areas up here. The shot rock, if you could just hit the point. That's the portion that they're using to hit the 70% impervious coverage.
They're using the septic shot rock to reach the 70%.
Right.
That's not where the development's going to go.
No, they want to build.
Going to go on the surface.
So you're just disregarding that whole area. My concern here was the definition of the shot rock as impervious or pervious. I did a little research and I came up with a letter from back in February 4th. It's the Highlands, it's the council's draft method for determination of impervious surfaces for redevelopment waivers, which we're talking about here. It's a multi-page, 6-7-page document where they get into formulas for determining impervious surfaces. They give the definition of impervious surface, which everybody knows. They include porous paving, paver blocks, gravel roads on a farm, crushed stone, decks, patios, elevated structures, and other similar structures. And then they go on to say that in some cases, turf grass and lawns that are compacted are similar to asphalt and concrete. Almost any surface that has been altered from some natural vegetated condition could be considered to reduce or prevent and become impervious surface. Page 5, we talked about crushed stone, and I would like to know what's the difference between shot rock and crushed stone. A little bit later, they say railroad ballast is also included in the landscape that meets the definition of impervious surface. And if railroad ballast and crushed stone, and we have many feet of shot rock, why is that?
I agree with your vote, and I think the DEP is obscene in their moving target for is impervious coverage or not. If it restricts development, it's impervious coverage. If it allows development, it's not. This is classic DEP. They interpret it to suit their ends. And these folks are victim of that to a certain degree. Now, whether or not DEP could have changed their mind, it's not going to be saying that, but it violates my sense of justice with that. The DEP is saying that when a farmer puts a gravel road down, something that contributes to his impervious coverage, but when these guys have a section of gravel in their property, that's not. It's wrong.
If a farmer on a piece of property has already exceeded his impervious surface and he wanted to put up another barn or just meeting his impervious surface and he has shot rock on his property, would that shot rock be used to prevent him from putting up a barn because it's considered impervious surface? It has to be one or the other. We're setting precedent here now that shot rock is not impervious surface. Does that mean, where do we get the separation between shot rock, crushed stone, railroad ballast? In my mind, it's all pretty similar.
There's another part of the definition of impervious surface that we included in your packet, which I think is
Margaret, I don't dispute that the DEP definition of the pervious surface can be construed, or maybe even clearly understood, to mean this or not that. That's the problem. The problem is not our staff's understanding of it. The problem is that the DEP has floated set of rules.
Okay. What got our attention is that an area that was described to us as impervious in its coverage with shot rock turns out to be heavily vegetated.
But, pardon me, you guys talked about that. It's deep. You know, you didn't take a big device, a drill, and get a core sample or anything like that. You just scratched the surface and saw there was dirt underneath the grass, and you said, okay, it's vegetated. How deep did you dig? What, a foot? Six inches?
6 inches. You know what? By the same token, if it's covered with soil and it's vegetated, how would that apply to a farmer who wants to reduce his impervious surface? Puts a foot of topsoil over his, all his gravel roads, it's wasting on the earth. The ailanthus, the invasive species grow. Is that no longer impervious surface?
That's right.
The farm definition is different. Add to the discussion. The farm definition for impervious consideration is different under the Act.
Hold on.
It's excluded. Farms are excluded from the Highlands Act. They have their own separate rules under the SADC and Department of Ag.
They are restricted in impervious surface.
Different.
I have to tell you that right in this room, we had a meeting, and I broke the subject of impervious surfaces with three or four DEP people here, if you recall. And DEP itself does not like the way they discuss and define impervious, because it's a moving target. It's a convenient thing for the DEP. I'm telling you, in our municipality, we changed our ordinance because gravel is pervious. We make people put gravel in septic systems so you perk the water, for crying out loud. And the DEP says if you have a gravel walk, that's impervious. The subject really needs to be looked into for consistency, and I think it deserves a lot more attention than just saying, well, this says this or that law says that. It's based on what the DEP said impervious, and the DEP itself, the DEP people themselves will tell you they're not happy with how they manage impervious and definition of impervious, because it's inconsistent, and it's convenient at times to say this is pervious or this is not pervious. It's something that we really need to pay attention to, I believe, so we don't fall into the same place. And I would challenge the DEP to qualify their definition and scientifically. I've asked our engineer to give me a number from 1 to 10 or 0 to 10, 0 being the water will flow through it and 10 it won't, like McAdam. Somewhere in between, there's a scale, a scientific scale, on how water will percolate through a medium. The DEP does not have that, will not have that. They just say, well, if it's not natural, it's impervious. Well, that's a lot of baloney, and I think I don't want to see us get tripped up with that, because it's really something.
What does that have to do with this application?
Thank you very much. Just want to say, from my understanding of reading this, there are two reasons. One is that it doesn't meet the 70% impervious surface definition. The other is that it's not a previous developed area. Remember the big picture here. We're supposed to be redeveloping areas that were developed. If you look at these pictures, the photographs that we were given, this is not a redeveloped, this is not a developed area that's being redeveloped. We're supposed to always be improving what we're doing or repurposing pieces that have been overused, that have resulted in, for instance, impacted soils or the removal of vegetation. So our big picture here is that we have pieces of property that they're trying to cobble together to show that they meet the 70% impervious, and yet if you look at the pictures, they're vegetated, they have soil on top of them, and they were not used for developed purposes in the past. So it's very different than saying you have a road that's been driven over, because that definitely impedes the absorption of precipitation because the soil is compacted. Unless we go out and do soil compaction tests or some sort of perk test, we're never going to have the exact empirical data that we need to say whether or not that soil actually perks or not, or whether or not it absorbs rainfall or not, but looking at the pictures, using the reasonable test that we use all the time and that our staff applies all the time, this is not impervious surface. And the area they want to develop is woods. It's not a developed area that's going to be redeveloped.
Thank you. Ms. Carlin,
just to point out, to make sure all the council members are on the same page in the public, even if you accept this as the impervious area, that's not where the redevelopment is going.
Right.
The redevelopment is going here, where it's never been.
Well, the resolution is written, says there are two criteria. And I think one of the criteria is, at best questionable, if not really wrong. So we're voting on this resolution as it is drafted right now. I get a hard time saying yes to it.
Nope.
The reason I bring this up is that throughout the Act and the Master Plan, they encourage redevelopment. From the third paragraph of the Act, it's important to ensure the economic viability of the community. It's a state's control. Throughout New Jersey Highlands, and have residential, commercial, and industrial development and redevelopment and economic growth. They're looking in the Act to promote economic development where appropriate. I think this is an appropriate area. I don't see any serious environmental constraints there. Further down in the Act, Section 63, it's in the public interest to encourage development, redevelopment, and economic growth and increasing concentration of the poor and the minorities in older urban areas jeopardizes the future and well-being of the state. And I think it's important that we do, in appropriate areas, encourage redevelopment. We're here arguing over whether large pieces of stone or small pieces of stone, it's a technicality for impervious surface. This is an opportunity to redevelop an area, to get some economic development in an appropriate area. Next to a major highway, in a built-up area, I don't see how we're hurting a water supply here. We don't, you know, the recharge is going to recharge alongside it. I don't see any serious environmental constraints there. I would like to see this redevelopment go forward.
Mr. Gustin, we keep talking about redevelopment. What was developed there before?
Nothing.
All right, then you can't have a redevelopment where there has been no development.
I will echo Mr. Bowden's sentence, but I'll take out the word redevelopment because of it with development.
But we're talking about a redevelopment area.
I know you don't like the act, but we're not here to change the law.
I know, right.
I don't think there's an assemblyman or a senator sitting at the table.
We're talking about a redevelopment area. There has been no development. If there has been no development, there can't be redevelopment. Any other comments? None.
One point.
Yes.
There were a lot of good arguments here for developing here. How did the staff come back on that? You did a lot of work on this, and you're recommending no. How do you counter these solid arguments over here from these gentlemen?
There are several. The redevelopment process, the way it works in terms of the Highlands, is that an applicant has the opportunity to approach the council through the staff and designate an area that the applicant proposes for redevelopment. It is up to them to draw the lines, and then the process is the staff reviews the lines and determines whether or not that the redevelopment area meets both criteria that are in this resolution. One, whether it was developed and therefore is in need of redevelopment. I'm not using that term as in the local redevelopment housing law, but under the Highlands law. And two, the law and the DEP regs and the Highlands procedures indicate that redevelopment areas must have 70% previous impervious cover. So there are various ways to draw the line. The way this application has come in, the quote-unquote shot rock area in the upper left, which was described as shot rock upon the staff's visit, did not look anything like the quote-unquote shot rock that was described in the upper right as being 40-foot deep rock. The definition in the law of impervious surface is also in the Highlands Act. And so the resolution before the council is simply to reject this application as it currently stands because the way it's drawn, when that upper left part, the applicant considered it yellow, which is impervious, upon a site visit it was determined not to be impervious, which dropped the 70% down to 30. If you look at the plan also, the whole industrial park area is not relevant. It's up to the applicant to propose a designated area. This is not to say that this application didn't get rejected, that tomorrow this applicant or the borough or the neighboring property owners could come back to the council and propose the entire area as a redevelopment area, and maybe some of that area would be redeveloped that was previously developed, and others would probably be restricted from development. So this is just on the this particular application as it stands.
Andy?
Yes, sir.
Question. Larry, in reading the resolution, that the site must have 70% impervious, it doesn't say, at least in the resolution, that the redevelopment must be on the 70% impervious. It simply says the site must have 70%. So presumably you could have a site that's 70% impervious, 30% pristine natural wildland. You could build on the 30% and not build the 70%. Correct?
Would that be new development? Would that be redevelopment?
It still has to meet two tests.
What's the other test?
Previously developed areas.
Areas.
Mm-hmm. So you are correct, Councilman Walton, in that the site can be a portion of a parcel or a portion of an aggregate of parcels in order to draw that site. That site must include 70% impervious surface as identified by the Act. And within that site, you may redevelop certain areas at a greater intensity and get relief from certain resources that might be triggered under Highlands Rule.
Where do you say that in this resolution that says that the redevelopment, the construction must be on the old?
Under the definition of redevelopment.
So when we did Borealis, if I remember this correctly, and then there was also the fragrance company up in the trade zone.
You're not off, right?
Mm-hmm. None of that development occurred on a portion of the site that was not previously developed. I thought Borealis extended into areas that didn't have something on it.
They were previously disturbed areas. They were previously disturbed areas.
What's the definition of disturbance?
It would be an area. The trucking company down in Mount Olive, when they extended their loading docks, that area was previously disturbed. It had been constructed on, it had been graded, it was regularly mowed, it had been disturbed. In this case, you have a completely forested area that has never been touched. That would be the difference between the redevelopment areas you've seen in the past and this redevelopment areas. Those areas where you're opposing new construction may have not had impervious surface or structures on them, but they were disturbed and had a history of disturbance. In this case, there's no history of disturbance, and it's completely undisturbed.
And to be clear, plowing a field for agricultural production is not considered disturbance.
Not under the agricultural activities are different. They have a different.
Well, I understand, but if you have a farm field within a redevelopment zone, is plowing a field disturbance? And I'm not trying to be wise, but I just want to know. I mean, is our definition of disturbance a deciduous hardwood forest? And is that the only thing that's considered undisturbed? Anything else disturbed, or what level of excavation needs to occur to trigger disturbance? And I'm not trying to. I want to understand. I don't mean to trip anybody up here.
There's no technical standards as to what's disturbed, what's developed or redeveloped, what's undeveloped. Some of it is judgment and visual site reviews, visual looking at things. So. Redevelopment does have different meanings to different people, but in the resolution that's before the council, essentially the threshold is that what was told to the staff and what was being recommended to the council as qualifying as at least 10% of the impervious area was determined on a site visit to not be impervious or shot rock. It was, in fact, soil, vegetated, did not impede drainage, etc. And the second aspect is because of that area where this is essentially a proposed new construction access road and storage facility in a forested area. That's not... The staff doesn't believe that clearing a forested area for one property owner to store construction equipment on constitutes redevelopment. So it's not as the technical standards how much soil is being moved. It's kind of a sense of what's out there and what's being proposed. Is it new development or is it redevelopment?
Thank you. Mr. Vogt? Mr. Vogt?
Yes. The development is going to occur in the lot from the Shot Rock to the other impervious areas. That whole area is going to be developed under a redevelopment plan. Is that what I'm understanding?
No, only this only area. Half, only the lower portion of the property is supposed to be developed. That is a forested area.
I'm going to read from this council memorandum that was sent out February 4th, the draft method for determination. The Highlands Act provides a process whereby applicants in the preservation area may seek a waiver from us. We make that decision. From NJDEP's Highlands Rules at NJAC 738 for the redevelopments in sites largely covered with impervious surface, that's 70%. Specifically, Section 9 and 11 of the Highlands Act authorizes the Highlands Council, us, to identify sites at which at least 70% of the area, thereof, is covered with impervious surface. The definition of impervious surface is as defined in Section 2 of the Highlands Act, and then it goes on. This says that if 70% of the property is impervious, it qualifies for redevelopment. If Shot Rock is impervious, this application deserves a waiver.
But Chairman, it hasn't been developed yet.
It doesn't say anything here about development.
It says redevelopment, Rich.
And redevelopment qualifies if 70% of the parcel is impervious. Redevelopment,
Mr. Chairman,
qualify for redevelopment is 70% is impervious. If the Shot Rock is impervious, this application qualifies for redevelopment.
It's really a two-part test, though, when you're leading out the other part, which is what Judge Dressler just talked about. It needs to be previously developed. And right in the resolution, it says, RMP, Part 6, Subpart D, states, redevelopment is a planning tool that converts underutilized areas, brownfields and grayfields, into new land uses through infill and that sort of reuse approaches. That's what I was saying before. We need to step back and look at what is the purpose of the redevelopment. The purpose of the redevelopment is to redevelop brownfields. This is not a brownfield. It's a woodland. And the other piece is in RMP Goal 6J and Policy 6J 1, 2, and 3, which further clarify that purpose of redevelopment is to permit the development of previously developed areas. This is not previously developed. It's untouched. It's woodland. I think it's a two-part test, and you can't just parse it out like this, and we have to step back and look at what is our big goal here. Big goal is to redevelop.
I think the issue
on
the table
appropriate areas.
Any other
issue? One more. Please. I believe that this was settled in the Act when they said that a piece of property that is 70% redeveloped brownfield that is 70% impervious surface is either disturbed or previously developed. I think it spells it out. They're saying that if a property is 70% impervious, it qualifies for redevelopment.
Yeah, but we live by the RMP, too.
Not for the state of New Jersey.
Any other? I've
got one more. There's two issues. I get the woodland. I get the redevelopment. I get it. Up there where they were working on the road, and they dumped that stone on that piece of property, they developed that property, and they made it impervious, whether we like it or not, by definition. That little hickey-do up there when they were working on the road, and they dumped that Shot Rock, doesn't matter if it's big or little. When you take anything that didn't occur there naturally and you put on that property, created an impervious
surface. That's not the definition of impervious surface.
Yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is.
Mr. Chairman, a call the question?
Please.
Thank you.
Okay, I was just going to do it. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Alstead.
Just to clarify, a yes vote is supporting the recommendation of staff. Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis?
No.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Savicich?
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefang?
Yes.
Councilmember Voden?
No.
Councilmember Walton?
No.
Chairman Riley?
Yes. I do agree with Mr. Voden and Mr. Walton on many aspects of this. I just don't think the birds can prove it at this point in time. That takes us to our next item, which is the public portion. At this point in time, we'll open it up to the public on all matters. Please raise your hand. Reminder to keep your comments to 3 minutes or less.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Council, and I'm going to take a tiny portion of my 3 minutes and give the rest of them to the second speaker, who is Juniper Leifert, who is the project coordinator for our LOPAC Concrete Initiative, which is a little bit like being a watershed association. It feels like old times for me. I used to be the director of the Great Swamp Watershed Association, and she is going to tell you about what we're doing in LOPAC Concrete.
I'm going to have some doors.
Your name for the record, please.
My name is Juniper Leifer. I'd like to thank the council for the opportunity to speak. I'd also like to thank Julia for the lovely introduction. We really are excited about this new river-friendly communities initiative called the LOPAC Concrete Initiative. You guys are all receiving a brochure right now, so you can take a look at it. I'm going to be brief, but I want to give you a quick overview of what we have going on, because we wanted to come in and share all of our efforts and our goals with you today. So the LOPAC Concrete Watershed covers approximately 22 square miles within six municipalities surrounding its Category 1 trout stream. So with funding from the William Penn Foundation, our watershed has been selected as a focus area for collaborative efforts of several conservation partner organizations. So we're working with three core partners, and those are the Nature Conservancy, New Jersey Audubon, and North Jersey RC&D. So quickly, the Nature Conservancy is working on testing and monitoring our stream's water quality. New Jersey Audubon is hard at work implementing river-friendly practices on local farms and doing other restoration work as well. North Jersey RC&D is preparing a watershed management plan through additional testing and monitoring. And this plan will enable us to identify areas in need of improvement and also the best ways in order to address them. So we look forward to using that data to make informed recommendations to the municipal leaders in our area. And LOPAC Concrete Initiative's role in this collective effort is to focus on public outreach. So we really aim to raise awareness about the importance of water quality throughout our region and to bring attention to this exciting investment of resources and funds from the greater conservation community. So we're doing this by developing a presence in the area through events and presentations and workshops. And we're also engaging the media in order to keep all of these regional conservation efforts in the news. And we're going to continue to provide volunteer opportunities and to support efforts to increase recreational opportunities throughout the watershed as well. So I encourage you all to take a look at that brochure, visit our website at lopacconcrete.org, let us know if there's any ways or any opportunities arise where we can work together toward our common goals, and I think that's just about it, but it's probably not the last you'll see of me. I thank you for your time again.
Thank you. Good luck. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Thank you. My name is Jerome Wagner. I live in Wayne, New Jersey. I'd like to speak briefly on the subject of the Pilgrim Pipeline. I'm just for context, I've worked for 30 years in environmental protection as an engineer. I'm currently an active member of what's called the Coalition to Stop the Pilgrim Pipeline. That group has been active since early summer of this year, and we're engaged around the area at the municipal level working on things like resolutions opposing the project. Just to set some context for the facts, I'm going to be summarizing from some written remarks. I'll submit a single copy at a later time to you. Anyway, so the Pilgrim Pipeline is two pipelines running between Albany and Linden, New Jersey, and other locations south of Linden, both of relatively large size, 18 and 16 inches, conveying Bakken crude oil from Albany down to Linden, where it would be refined into products which would then be returned to the Albany market, products like gasoline. The precise route is not known at this time. Formal submissions of applications has not yet occurred, but based on the maps that we currently have available, which are come from the company, Pilgrim Holdings, the pipeline will cross through sections of the Highlands region, specifically from north border in Malwa down through
Malwa.
And then down south through Montville and Parsippany Troy Hills. So those are some of the facts, at least as they stand right now. Now, my estimations show that about 25 miles would be of this route would be occurring within the Highlands region, so a quite appreciable length. Again, for each of those pipes, so 50 miles total of piping. I've mentioned a couple of the municipalities that are in the region, the Highlands region, that would see this pipe per the current mapping. The other ones include Oakland, Wanacue, Bloomingdale, Pequannock, Kinnelon, in addition to Montville, Parsippany, and Malwa. I probably don't need to say anything about the threat to water quality and water resources that this project could pose. I'm sure you're all much more aware of that risk than I am, and know better the quantities, the numbers of people who receive water from this area and so forth. So I won't dwell on that. I will point out, though, that oil products are much different than the natural gas products. I mean, I was involved somewhat with the Tennessee Gas Pipeline when it ran Loop 325 between West Milford, Ringwood, and Malwa, including directional drilling under the Monksville. Again, being a volatile product, you might hope that would eventually be relieved. If contamination occurred, it would be relieved from the resource over time. That would not be the case for petroleum products. Again, so I think we need to keep in context the nature of the risk. I've mentioned that there's been activity ongoing relative to municipal resolutions. As of this time, over a dozen municipalities, including Malwa, Oakland, Pequannock, and Passaic County, have adopted resolutions in opposition to the project. Again, it's an early juncture. We're using this as a means of education and engagement at the local level. And we view the Highlands Coalition, the Highlands Council, as an important prospective engagement partner in this effort, you know, should we get to that point.
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. Thank you. May I submit some?
Over here. Anybody else in the public wishes to be heard? Please raise your hand.
Hello, I'm Kathy Abbott, and I am on the Chatham Township Committee, where we have passed a resolution opposing the Pilgrim Pipeline. I'm glad we had the introduction of all the facts earlier. And in Chatham Township, we are just outside the Highlands region, but I wanted to communicate the importance of the water, of our feeling about the water resources, and the high density of the population where this pipeline will be going through the proposed PSC. Path is a PSE&G right-of-way. I'll just read you a couple of key lines from our resolution. We think the Township Committee has tremendous reservations and concerns about the ability for this pipeline to endanger the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens, families, property, and environment. Secondly, consequence of that is that the proposed project will have a detrimental impact on tax revenue of the Township of Chatham, based upon a decline in property values along and adjacent to the new pipeline and surrounding neighborhoods as a direct result of this project. And that's based on the fact that, as the gentleman said, oil products travel underground in the water table. And we don't know whose sump pump they'll be coming out of, whose home will have the fumes. We have a basement high water table in Chatham Township, so water resources are very obvious to us. Besides that, we have the New Jersey American Water Company taking water from the Berry Valley Aquifer in Chatham Borough, Madison area, up to the Short Hills area, and then we have Passaic River. This pipeline crosses the Passaic River three times, so very large area of our water resources, drinking water resources, are at risk, And the oil comes from far away, can go through other means such as barges, trains, doesn't affect the groundwater nearly as much as a pipeline leak does. And we've done a lot of research looking at it's fairly common to have pipeline leaks, and it's also most common to have local residents as opposed to the federal government or the pipeline company finding a leak. And so they go undetected for a long time, unlike, say, a barge leak or a train leak. So that's where you have the hidden leaks that would contaminate the groundwater for a long period of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Good evening. My name is Ken Dalsky. I'm at 21 Winfield Drive in Parsippany. I would also like to talk about the Pilgrim Pipeline. I was kind of the thorn in the Parsippany Council's side that got them to pass the first resolution that kind of got started back in June, I believe. And now I think we have about 15 towns that have opposition, have passed resolutions opposing the pipeline. I'd just like to point out a couple of other things. First of all, this pipeline is totally unnecessary. The Bakken crude that is sent by train today is coming down the Hudson on barges and is being brought back. Not a perfect solution, but no solution that transports hydrocarbons is really perfect. There is no bottleneck in terms of bringing the Bakken oil to market. The refinery that is going to handle this, the Bayway refinery, is building its own rail facilities, both in Linden and in the North Dakota oil fields, and is planning to have extensive transportation of this oil from the oil fields directly to its refinery. So there is no bottleneck that this pipeline is opening up, and has nothing to do with energy independence or anything else like that. It is purely a money-making venture. I have nothing against capitalism. It's probably the greatest engine for economic development the world has ever seen, but we have to be very smart about it. And if you have something like this that not only is going to go through the Ramapo watershed and the Berry Valley aquifer, but it's also in a lot of places going to be 50 feet from the homes of people who live along mostly PSE&G right-of-ways, you really have to stop and think about it. It is of no value to New Jersey. It produces nothing for New Jersey. All it does is puts us at risk that four guys in Albany for the next 30 years are going to have control over whether we get safe air and safe water, or they may decide as the oil economy goes through its ups and downs that, well, we don't have to do as much maintenance on the pipeline as we used to, and what happens is you get situations like the BP oil spill in the Gulf a couple of years ago. So the equation here is very simple. No benefits, a lot of risk, no reason whatsoever to allow this pipeline to go through New Jersey. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Yes, good evening. Monique Purcell, New Jersey Department of Agriculture. I just wanted to circle back about the Franklin Township issue regarding the checklist. The debate about whether the checklist ordinance or the full land use ordinance is necessary in Franklin Township. I'm pretty sure they only are conforming with the preservation area.
That's correct.
And we feel confident that this is only a first step. So if in fact any of these parcels or the 448 acres have a development application, that would be the time to have that further analysis. But we feel comfortable that the checklist is appropriate.
Hi, I'm Brendan Keating. I'm from Chatham Borough. I'm also talking about Pilgrim Pipeline with a group called Chatham Citizens Opposing the Pipeline. We're nonpartisan. We're just some regular folks. I'm a regular guy. I grew up here. Throughout my lifetime, New Jersey's put together a really great program to change our reputation to being the Garden State. But everywhere else I go, we're still known as Dirty Jersey. Now, that's not by accident. This state's economy was built by oil 100 years ago when the Standard Oil refinery was put in Bayonne. I used to live in Bayonne. There was an explosion about 100 years ago that lit the harbor on fire for 3 days. And there are still places in neighborhoods where you can dig down and there's still contamination. You know, I know that this is not what you guys are voting on, but I just want to let you know what's at stake here. You know, where I live down the stream, you know, you guys have the ability to block this. You're a real governing body. We're just some activists here, and we're trying to get the word out and let everybody know that, you know, what's at stake here. You know, but we don't want to be Dirty Jersey anymore. I think that time has passed. And I just hope that you can keep in mind that there are regular folks, middle of the road, even Bill O'Reilly, who doesn't believe in climate change, says, I'd rather have a cleaner world than a dirty world. So, you know, please, that's what the Highlands is here for, so help us out. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Deborah Post. I'm Farmed Highlands landowner of Chester Township. Mr. Shope, Mr. Klump, and I have been provided with 80 executed proxies from harmed landowners, authorize us to speak as their spokespersons in connection with this council's processes. I am submitting copies of the executed documents with my comments here today and direct that they be included in the council's minutes. Please note, 80 times 3 is 240 minutes. The agenda for the impacted landowner stakeholder meeting scheduled for December 10th includes the monitoring program PowerPoint presentation, which has been publicly available for months and which we have heard several times. Discussion points include queries regarding how to improve communication and education, as well as access to information. Does this council think the impacted landowners are clueless, uneducated, and can't read? The landowners have been immersed in the Highlands Act tragedy for over a decade and are more knowledgeable of the Act and this council's processes than many in this room, some of whom don't even get the basics accurately. The purpose of the monitoring program is, by your own words, to develop factual foundations for potential amendments to the RMP. The hour-and-a-half impacted stakeholders meeting intends to address anything but those factual foundations and is shaping up to be nothing more than a kangaroo meeting dominated by staff condescension. I'm disappointed but not surprised. The stakeholder briefing book is almost a comical regurgitation of the RMP. I asked how many consultant hours this council wasted on its preparation. Its cost might have compensated a harmed landowner. I'm attaching my formal objection to the impacted landowner stakeholder meeting agenda to my comments today, along with the non-response I received, which advises that the concerns will be discussed at the meeting itself, promising to divert yet more time from the stakeholders meeting purported purpose. I'm advised that I am too hard on the staff, rather an ironical charge, given that I'm the one who lost 18 buildable lots in Chester Township, and they have cushy government pensions funded by my tax dollars. Please note that the staff didn't even bother to include the harmed landowners in the original stakeholder list, requiring us to utilize several meetings of our three-minute allocation in protest. Now the staff has prepared an agenda that defeats the purpose of the stakeholder meeting, turning it into a farce. The authorities' report described the staff as wielding punitive and malicious tools. The staff invented blind to the line to harm yet more landowners who had previously, luckily, been in the planning area. I have been following this council since its inception, and I have observed a staff determined and intent on ensuring that the harmed landowners remain harmed. Just compensation has just never been an item on the staff's to-do list. And may I also add as an aside, the vegetation you saw in that last proposal were really invasive weeds. Does nobody really recognize an invasive weed habitat? That proposal was basically, as I hear it here for the first time today,
to clean up a construction mess created by the state that has become a happy habitat for invasive weeds. Invasive weeds is more important than climate change. Where are all you guys?
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Please raise your hand.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for letting me in. This thing working. Is it working?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You can hear me. I don't have to use that. But I am Hank Klump. I own 150 acres in the Highlands Preservation Area. I will ask you once again the same question I have asked every month for going on 11 years. Where is the scientific study that put my property into the preservation area? I ask. Let's face it. We all know it was politics, never scientific. Please provide me being wrong by showing me the study I have been asking for. Everyone in this room knows a dedicated funding source is needed, and that the act should never have been signed without just compensation in place for those losing their property values. Equity is gone. I am sure many of you are tired of hearing me month after month, but you are probably the same people who are not being affected by the robbery and being asked to consider accepting pennies on a dollar. You hear me once a month, but I live the injustice every day. Santa Claus, elves, Highlands Council, flying reindeers. I believe in all these but one. Can you guess which one? I'll repeat them. Santa, elves, Highlands Council, and flying reindeers. Can you guess which one?
One of the things that I noticed when I came in and I picked up my papers in the front there, no public comment today from the last month's work. Nothing at all. That's how I get my information. All right? And I got a hold of this thing here. And this was out on the desk. This is Highlands Regional Master Plans. And it says, we need your input, all right? And in there it says water, resource, agriculture, housing, transportation, not one word about equity. Come on. What happened? Here. It doesn't even show it. You people are pulling my leg or something. Come on. I know you understand the problems that the farmers or any landowner has. But it seems it's omitted. Thank you very much for letting me. And have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you for the car.
Okay.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue? Yes, sir.
David Pringle, I'm the campaign director for Clean Water Action. We have thousands of members in the Highlands region and many thousands more, probably tens of thousands, that consume Highlands drinking water. For the record, I believe in the Highlands Council, and as I continue to tell my skeptical 14-year-old, I also believe in Santa. I live at 333 Walnut Avenue in Cranford. We talking today very quickly about the building pipeline. I won't repeat the things that said. We were opposed to this pipeline even before I found out it's proposed to run a quarter mile by my house. And its biggest reason, it's not needed and it's dangerous. And join all the folks that have raised it to you, your attention today. And one point that has been made, this is not like the other linear developments and pipelines that have come before you. This is an oil pipeline. It is not a utility. If and when they do move forward with their plan, hopefully they won't, because there's lots of other people that can stop it too, they will have to come to you and you will have to give them formal approval. And it's clearly inconsistent with your mission and your plan, so we urge you to do so, say that the two counties that are most impacted that are in the Highlands, Passaic County has passed a resolution against it. The only two Bergen County towns, Mahwah and Oakman, have passed resolutions against it, as has Monville, Pequannock, Riverdale, and Kinnawan and Bloomingdale. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue?
Hi, my name is Dawn Ferguson. I live in Chathamboro. I'm also here to talk about the Pilgrim Pipeline, but I want to thank just the existence of this council to protect the land that we have. I didn't know as much about the Highlands as I've most recently come to find out about. You are charged with really preserving a beautiful piece of New Jersey that not too many people know about, so thank you. And as you well know, you are providing over 5 million people with water as far east as Newark and as close by as around. So I urge you that when this issue comes before the council, as it will, that you oppose the Pilgrim Pipeline. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to hear on any issue? Over here to my left. Okay.
My name is David Shope. I have a farm in Lebanon Township. And thanks to Hank Klump, who received a copy of a letter addressed to me, and I had not received it. And the letter was, I asked for who was going to attend this December 10th meeting. And you responded by sending a list of the invitees. What I wanted to know, all who were going to attend. That includes staff, DEP, consultants, whoever is going to attend, their job titles, and their reason for being there. That should have been obvious. And I'm asking for it again here. As far as ag value, which came up earlier, thanks to Tracy Carluccio, ag value is determined by what the ag land can earn. If it cannot earn a decent return on investment, it is not a good investment and has very little value. That should be the definition. It's the definition for every other kind of investment. It should be the investment. It's the definition for this. I would ask Mr. Riley to send a clarification to all those people who have signed this, and Lebanon Township being one, concerning and making note of the fact that if an applicant feels he has an exemption by virtue of the date of his deed, the town should acknowledge that and not require any further action. I attended the Lebanon Township, a meeting where this resolution was passed. No such notation was made. News to me. Glad you informed me. Now inform everybody else. Disturbed land. Schooley's Mount was logged off 100 years ago, and there's photographs to prove it. Cut to the ground, clear cut. Many other parts of New Jersey were clear cut to feed the iron smelters. Were they disturbed? How long does it have to remain before it's not considered disturbed anymore? I say your definition of disturbed is disturbing, because you really don't have one. Let me just conclude by saying that your staff, which when I read the resumes, and who you defend, let me give you an example of some of RPA's work, Regional Plan Association, in their document, A Region at Risk, blah, blah, blah. They're speaking about the Highlands, and they're creating a scenario that they project for 2020. In New Jersey, the cities have lost jobs and nearly all the middle-class residents, and pressure to develop formerly rural areas has increased. The last commercial farm north of Trenton was protected in 2007 as an outdoor museum to preserve this important part of the Garden State's heritage. It became one of the most popular tourist attractions, which has become in the nation's most suburbanized state. And then it goes on to talk a little further. Many families have purchased virtual reality programs simulating mountain trails and fly fishing experiences. This is the Regional Plan Association. This is the people that you hired, that you gave money to monitor the progress of the Highlands Master Plan.
Thank you for your comments.
I'm not done yet. I have one more. Oh, let me get right to the quick then. When I take a look at your staff, I find that they're nothing more than retreads from the Regional Plan Association, the DEP, or New Jersey Future. That's where they come from. That's why you're getting put before you what you get put before you. Their prejudices are reflected in the work that they give you to act on.
You.
And you people don't do anything more than rubber stamp what they put before you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issues?
Good evening. I'm Bob Bracken. I'm a representative of the New Jersey Builders Association. And as usual, we're here to make our monthly comments with regard to the checklist ordinance, which we believe you're using illegally against the land use, municipal land use law. There's no transparency to it. And we would seek you to stop using the checklist ordinance. The other is your approach to the RNP itself. It's just a monitoring review that you're doing, and nothing from what we hear from yourselves or staff is going to be any substantial changes to the RNP moving forward. It's just going to be a report card. We don't believe that that's what the purpose of the six-year review is by both the Act and the RNP. My last comment, I'm going to switch hats. I'm talking as an individual, as a former mayor of Hardingston Township. I happen to be reading through your Landowner Equity and Land Preservation Committee October 23rd minutes, and I come across an item called water fee. I mean, Highlands Council was first proposed. There was water fees for the people in the Highlands region to pay for the landowners' loss of equity. I thought that kind of went off the table and got lost. Reading it here, it looks like you're going to entertain taxing the people that lost their equity in the Highlands region to pay back their equity. Why don't we come up with a plan, and that's why I'm not here speaking as a builder member. Why don't we come up with a plan to tax the people that are using the 5.8 million that are getting the water from the area that where we lost all of our equity? That's my only comment, is it?
Yeah. You couldn't be more wrong about what water fee is in this case.
That's how I. If
it's
I'm
fine.
Wrong,
it's
Your
fine.
Honor,
you couldn't,
I,
be,
I,
you couldn't be more wrong.
I, then that's not how I read this here.
Thank you.
I appreciate your comment. Thank you.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Julia Summers, very quickly, I just wanted to point out to you that the dual appraisal passed unanimously, passed the Senate. It is expected to come up with Assembly probably this year, and we expect it to be signed by the governor. So it will be back in place. This issue of equity keeps coming up. So
this year?
Expected to be.
This year?
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Please raise your hand. Seeing none, we'll close the public portion. We have no executive session. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.